But we work with Young Life in Munich, Germany. We've been there for over 10 years now. We had a big celebration for our 10-year anniversary in German this year, put on by a bunch of our German friends, which was a blast. We do, Young Life is an outreach ministry to adolescents. And so we are, our vision and mission is to share Jesus Christ with teenagers and help them grow in their faith, quite simply. And we do that in relational ministry and relationships with teenagers and young adults outside of the church. So what we're most passionate about and what we're best at really is putting adult Christians strategically into the lives of non-believing young people. So we don't expect for them to come to us because there's plenty of churches they could show up to if they wanted to. But we're there to find the ones that would never show up to church and to meet them where they are and to love them and share who Jesus Christ was and why that matters to them. So that's our passion. That's what we get to do. We spend a lot of time training our German staff and volunteer leaders and discipling our leaders because often they don't have much of a biblical basis to start out with. But yeah, that's what we do. We've been there, like I said, 10 years, and we work with middle schoolers, high schoolers, and university students with different teams, and we have an exchange program. So, little plug, if you have an extra bedroom in your house, and you ever think maybe God is tugging at you, you can have a German student live with you for a school year, and it's an awesome, awesome opportunity, and we're always looking for families that can host students. A huge part of our ministry is this Amicus program, is what it's called. We had a kid, Klaus, that was here this past school year and was at Grace, which was awesome. And he learned and grew a lot in his faith the year that he was here. A crazy high percentage of our staff and volunteer leaders are past Amicus students. And so it's a huge discipleship and leadership development opportunity for us. For German students that maybe grew up in the church or didn't, to see faith lived out in a family is often a very life-changing experience because most have not necessarily had that experience. Even if they grew up in the church, often it just feels different. And so going into a different culture, they can experience faith in a new way, and then for them to bring that back and translate that into German culture and live that out in their home is a really big deal. So just a little plug there. I promised my friend who does Amicus full-time in Germany that I would plug it. Host a student for a year. You won't regret it.
It'll change your life.
It will change your life. We handed out these maps. We're really bad about like printing materials, but we actually did it this year, so everybody gets one all day long. Everybody gets a map.
That's right.
If you see us, we give you a map.
That's right. If you don't have a map in your hand right now, you should.
That's right.
So, I'll just throw them.
So there's just a quick overview of what we do as a ministry and then a map of where we are in Munich and where we're moving. We're about to expand significantly in Munich to go to a couple other high schools and then another student housing complex in Germany to expand our university ministry in the next couple of years. So,
which is thanks very much to Grant.
Yes,
Grace.
That you'll hear about if you're in the service.
That's right, you will.
That's right. Mm-hmm. But again, real quick before I give it over to my husband.
Ryan Wildman.
Ryan Wildman. I want to never miss an opportunity to say thank you to this church. But I'm going to get emotional. Dang it.
Get emotional. It's okay.
We told Lucas this week that we feel like we're kind of like satellite staff of Grace Bible Church because we would not be in Germany if it wasn't for this church. I tell people all the time how grateful I am for the biblical teaching I received my whole life and what a difference that's made and a gift has been to my ministry. That I can't be proud of personally. It's because I grew up here. But then financially, this church and individuals in this church almost solely fund our entire ministry. And so we're just so grateful that this is our home church and that we get to be here. And we're thankful for the support that we get and just the interest that everyone here always shows in what we're doing. So thank you guys so much. You are a part of our ministry. And we would not exist without you guys. So. All right. I'm just going to stand out of the way over here, and you can tell me what to do.
Sounds good. Is that how a relationship ever works? No. I want like Emily was saying, the fun thing that we like being in this class is that we get to talk about something that's not directly related necessarily to our ministry, but it's something that we're excited about, that's on our hearts, and something that we're learning, and we get to just kind of share that with you, and yeah, I feel like it's things that we learn in a very different context than where you live, but has probably a whole lot of application. Maybe looks different, but translated. I want to just start by telling you my thesis right off the bat. So even if you decide after you hear that you want to leave, that's okay. You've gotten really everything you need from me right off the bat. Our thesis for this little Bible study I wanted to go into is just that in your calling as a minister in the world around you, your family and your ministry are not two mutually exclusive things that you have to choose to invest time in, but are very much two things that need to belong together, that can belong together, and are better when they belong together. And that's it. I could stop talking right now, really. But I want to kind of go into Scripture. We would like to go into the Word of God and kind of unpack where that comes from. Would somebody be willing to open up to Genesis chapter 12 and read verses 1 through 3 aloud? My friend the Wilkinson's back there.
They're talking.
The Lord said to Abram, "Go out from your land, your relatives, and your father's house to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you. I will curse those who treat you with contempt. And all the peoples on earth will be blessed through you."
Read that last sentence one more time.
All the peoples of the earth will be blessed through you.
Yeah. That's what's known as the Abrahamic covenant. And Father Abraham had many sons, and many sons had Father Abraham, and I am one of them, and so are you. So let's all praise the Lord. As people that get to fall into that lineage, God said, "Abraham, I am going to bless you. I'm going to bless those that bless you. I am forced to curse those who do not bless you," or curse those. Part of our covenant is I have to. But it's because you are to be a blessing to the world around you. I think that in any job that you're in, it's super helpful if you have a job description. Like one of those things that just tells you, when you wake up in the morning, you come to work, and you're like, what am I supposed to do? I look at my job description and I have some clarity. And the simpler, the better, right? But my question to you is, as followers of Jesus, as people that are part inheritors of this calling that God gave His chosen people, and that we as the bride of Christ get to also live out, what's our job description? What does that say about our job description?
To be a blessing.
To be a blessing, right. But what does that mean? Yeah.
I love them and honor them because I'm loving and honoring them. I'm loving and honoring God.
Yeah.
So I want to bless my employer.
Yeah.
And for your business. And so be good for them, look for opportunities to encourage them, to catch them doing the job right, to give them a coffee, whatever. Just always be looking at opportunity to encourage, bless.
Yeah.
Speak a blessing into their lives, saying, "Hey, that meant a lot to me. Thank you."
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's great. Like, as an employer, somebody who supervises other people, their job is not to be a blessing to me, to make my job easier. My job is actually to make them be the best versions of who they are and who they call to be, the best opportunities they have. Yeah. What else? Any other thoughts on being a blessing, or yes?
In some ways, it's kind of comforting. Verse 3 says, "I will bless those who bless you, curse those who curse you." That's God doing that thing.
Yeah.
We don't go out there and say, I've got to pay attention to all this stuff so much as I can trust the God who says I will.
Yes. Not in the job description.
Yeah.
Yeah, that part's not. You're right. We get to leave that to God. Yeah. What did you want to say?
I think being a blessing is being a conduit. You're a conduit for God's love.
Yeah.
It's being that vessel that he works through. So whatever that looks like in a given day might change.
Yeah.
It changes with some people. But
right.
If you are open to looking for opportunities to being that conduit for God's love to others.
Yeah.
In quick moments with strangers or in deep moments with close friends, then you're being that blessing.
Yeah. I'm not an engineer, so I'm going to say something that probably makes me sound stupid, but as far as I understand electricity and conduction, anything that electricity touches, it's transmitting, it's a conduit of electricity to that, which means I've got, in a given day, several dozen, maybe hundreds of touch points that, without feeling overwhelmed like, oh my gosh, I've got so much I've got to do, we have an opportunity to be a conduit of blessing, an outpouring of blessing, a shock of blessing, in a positive sense, I guess. Let's shock you with some blessing.
There's some other churches for that.
That's right. not Grace Bible.
That's not here.
Let's look at Mark chapter 12. We're staying chapters of 12. We won't go outside of Mark chapter 12. 28 through 31. Somebody feeling brave and wanting to read that out loud for us?
One of the teachers of the law came and heard them debating. Noticing that Jesus had given them a good answer, he asked him, "Of all the commandments, which is the most important?" "The most important one," answered Jesus, "is this: Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. The second is this: Love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these."
What does that say about our job description? What was that? It's simple? It is simple. Yeah. You know how teachers ask you a question that has like, you're like, it's a super obvious answer. I feel dumb even saying it out loud again. This is one of those questions. It's okay. It can be more complex than that, but go ahead and say we can say the obvious thing out loud.
Love God, love others.
Love God, love others. Yeah. Love others how? As yourself. Yes, sir.
One of the things I love about this command is the fuel for the Great Commission.
Yeah.
Make disciples of all nations.
Yeah.
One of the things that you can do to love someone else is when the Spirit says, introduce them to the most wonderful person that ever born.
Uh-huh.
Love them at the right time when the Spirit's right. And maybe the blessings will help in that or not. But one of the things that you can do to love others is share the greatest news that ever happened.
Right. Yeah. Right. Like, what if I had gotten access suddenly to a place where you could show up and have the most amazing food for free all the time. You just pop over there. A loving thing is to say, hey, by the way, have you driven by that place where you get free food all the time, every day? We share that thing that gives us overwhelming sense of peace and security in our world. And I think that loving God means, by nature, loving others, because we're loving God's the people he created, the world he created. And we have that calling to be part of God's plan to be be blessed to be a blessing in the world around us. One other verse, Matthew 5, verses
13 to 16. Bible on me here.
You are the salt of the earth. But if salt loses its flavor, how can it be made salty then? There's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled on by people. You are the light of the world. A city located on a hill cannot be hidden. People do not light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and give light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before people so that they can see your good deeds and give honor to your Father in heaven.
Mm-hmm. What does that say about our job description?
Well, I
don't hide it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't hide what?
Your
light. That's right. Mm-hmm. Let your light shine bright tonight. Where does light have to be in order to not be hidden? Out. But like, what's around light? I mean, if
darkness,
right? Light has to be in darkness to be light. Otherwise, it's just more of the same, right?
I love all these verses. On all of these passages, there's such a clear two sides that it's never one without the other. When it talks about what it means to be a Christian in the world, it is always be filled with God's love, be blessed, be a light, which requires having God's love in us to be a light. But there's always a purpose. There's always a mission in the world around us. It's never just about us. It's always be blessed to be a blessing. Love God, love others. Be a light in the darkness around you. That's something we're passionate about.
Yeah.
And I think the Bible is very clear on it.
Yeah. You can find these themes repeated over and over again, but if we were to just get a simple breakdown of what is our job description, what are we called to be as followers of Christ in the world around us, is to first love God, and out of an overflow of that love, love other people. To be a blessing, a conduit of God's goodness and God's blessing in the world around us. And the light that God has given us, we cannot hide it. We cannot seclude it away in other people where we can shine bright in our lightness and in our buildings. But we have to be in dark places to shine our light. We got to be in festering, gross food in bad spots to be salt. Maybe that's not a very good analogy. Cook would probably... I'm gonna take that one back, all right? You have to be in unsalty places to be salt. The calling that we have is actually harder to live out today, I think, in the way that our cities are structured, in the way that our communities are structured, in the way that our whole life is insular between our house to our car, to our job, to our church, to our car, to our home, and so forth and so on. We live in a city where we get to get in public transportation every day, and we walk on the streets to go to the places that we're going with all of our other neighbors, and they're all on top of us. I mean, I exit my front door and I'm in the stairwell with 10 other people. I don't have a chance to insulate as much as we do here, but it's still, we live with people that their main focus as followers of Christ is to figure out, how do I insulate more? Like, how do I make sure that the people I'm around are the biggest proponents and cheerleaders of my faith. And I get that, and it's hard, but what we are constantly trying to do is to say, do that, get fed, but you got to go take that someplace to where it's light in a dark spot. And so as people that live in a place where it's really easy to be insulated, I guess... my next question is, what are some ways, you gave some really good examples of like his Bible study with some guys that from TI in the coffee shop, we didn't get just engage them. But where do you guys just throw out some, here's places that I actually have an opportunity to be light in a dark spot. You don't have to tell me how, you can just say, these are touch points, these are conduits, or places where I can shock people with blessing.
I think it's a group with a lot of parents, like sitting with other parents waiting for your kid to finish whatever practice.
Right.
Like whether it's soccer, gymnastics,
yeah.
You're trapped usually in a space with a bunch of, and we're all typically looking at our phones.
Yeah.
And we're waving to our kids. But
yeah.
Instead, look up and engage in a conversation.
That is a great thought. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what else?
The gym?
The gym.
I love
no,
that.
That's...
I've met countless different lifestyles that I never thought would be, but now I'm with them every single day at the same time. We know each other's kids' names. We know each other. We live completely different lifestyles.
Yeah.
But we bonded over something we can talk over. And
yeah.
Respect of each other's.
Yeah. There's nothing dumb about that. That is the one of the
great,
easiest
great
places
example.
To just
yeah.
connect over something that we're doing together and saying, hey, can I spot you? And let me tell you about Jesus. I'm going to drop this. No, but it's super communal. I worked in a gym for a couple years up in Plano whenever we lived here, and just we chat people up all day. Oh. Yes? Yeah.
Even just with your neighbor kids.
Yeah.
We have working parents that they have really no family life because they're working nights and
yeah.
days. And we just incorporate kids into our household, and so they're there for prayers at dinner.
Yeah.
They're there to talk about principles of how we follow Jesus in this or that circumstance.
Yeah.
And they start getting incorporated into our holiday traditions.
Yeah.
And start hearing the meanings and seeing what we do and start hearing why we do it. And that's easy. It's not like I have to carve out an extra 2 hours to
right.
witness to mm-hmm. the kids in my neighborhood. I just bring them into our family
line. Right. I think it's a great segue into talking about you have a calling to your family. Mm-hmm. Like if you have children, God gave you those children, and we're going to talk about what does that job description look like, and how do those things overlap. If you would be willing to open up to Deuteronomy
6. 1-9.
It's a long one. Mhm. Anybody want to take the first four verses of that? 6:1-4? Yes, sir.
Now this is the commandment, the statutes, the rules that the Lord your God has commanded me to teach you, that you may do them in the land to which you're going to possess, that you may fear the Lord your God, that you and your sons' sons, by keeping all the statutes and his commandments, which I command you all the days of your life, that your days may be long. Hear therefore, O Israel, and be careful to do them, that it may go well with you, that you may multiply greatly as the Lord your God, the God of your fathers, has promised you, in a land flowing with milk and honey.
So we pick up from there and read to verse 9.
Hear, O Israel, the Lord is God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your might. These words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your sons, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontals on your forehead. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates.
Hmm. You read those last 7-9 just one more time through.
Sure. You shall teach them diligently to your sons.
And daughters.
And shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontals on your forehead. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates.
All right, parents. What's your job description? I think I heard it 6 times, but I didn't hear it loud enough to impress them on your children. No? Impress what on your children? What was that? The commandments and statutes. Yeah.
Just summed up in love God with all your heart. The commandments and
yeah.
statutes.
Right. Mm-hmm. What is the greatest commandment? Mm-hmm. The origin of all commands is this: love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and mind. Love your neighbor as yourself. Teach love of God to your children. I've got two nieces. Like I've got lots of nieces and nephews. Actually, we were visiting them this week, and we were sitting around. We were all together this week, and it was really cool. But we were sitting there around the breakfast table, and one of my sister got her son reciting Psalms 23 back to her. They've been working on it at they go to a classical Austin classical school down in Austin, and then the other cousin, who's my brother's oldest daughter, jumped in, and she's a little older and
helped him out.
She's definitely much smarter. No, she's just a really smart kid. Not smarter like in that sense. She just, anyways. So we're gonna erase that part. Yeah, we're gonna edit that, right? That's good. But so she starts going, and he joins in with her because he was struggling, and she. Every word of it. I turned to my sister. I said, okay, your turn. She's like, I can't. My sister. But I thought, Psalms 23 is a fantastic verse. What a great verse to have written on your heart, right? But it occurred to me that words that are just written on our doorposts, words that are decorative in our home, words that we even hang on tassels down front, we don't do that, but in Orthodox Jewish cultures, they do. Those are just words until we have a connection to what it means to live it, to how we practically apply that to our lives. And so the thought that I've had going through my head for this, the day or two since then, is, okay, what could you, how do you, as a parent, give your kids some type of context for what that means? Because we're not shepherds. You know, mm-hmm. Like none of my kids know what it's like to be around sheep. Well, sometimes they do, but not in the sense of like I take care of sheep. They don't get a sense of like what does a green pasture mean? They just have a full refrigerator. But how do we give our kids context to that?
Let me take over.
Yeah, why don't you jump in from there? Is there one more verse that we were going to talk about on that? Okay.
That's all our verses.
All right, bring us home, baby. Bring us home.
No, you're going to have to go into the class. Mm-hmm. So, I feel like one of the things, the reason we wanted to talk about this morning is because we moved to Germany to do full-time ministry there, and that was kind of took over our whole life when we were young and married and without kids, and we were just kind of gone all the time, hanging out with students and that kind of thing. And then we had two kids. And then we're trying to figure out, okay, what does this look like now? And as we work with young people, with volunteer leaders, we've often seen they want to volunteer for a little while. And then once they have kids, they're kind of like, well, now I'm probably out. Which, disclaimer, we totally get. There's different seasons in your life, and you do have to adjust always in different seasons. But one thing that we have learned over time and are beginning to become passionate about is that the ministry that we do and our faith and our family life do not have to be competing elements, that really they work best when they're all mixed together. And going through these verses of understanding what it means to be a follower of Jesus, whether or not you do this full-time, I mean, full-time ministry really means we do a lot of admin work to help volunteers to be able to do ministry on the side, which we do also. So it's not like we're really sharing Jesus all day long, unfortunately. That would be a lot more fun. But this calling that all of us are called to as followers of Jesus, to love God, to be filled by the Holy Spirit, and then to pour that out all around us, to be a blessing all around us, that is what Deuteronomy is talking about when it's saying, teach that to your children all the time, in everything that you do. And that's not secluded to an hour of the day. It's not secluded to the time that we sit down and read our Bibles together, which we also do. That's also really important. But if they don't experience in our family ministry lived out, how will they ever know how to do ministry in the world around them? If they are never exposed to the outside world, they're going to be in it one day. How are they going to know what it means to live out faith in that world unless they got to do that as a family? And that's part of what this is part of the discipleship of our children. As we disciple others in our ministry, the really incredible gift is that through that, we are also discipling our children because they're a part of it. They see it. It's in our house all the time. And not everybody has to have people in their house all the time like we do. We're kind of crazy in that sense. We have really people in our house all the time. But however that works for you as a family, we're just convinced that those things go together. So let's talk about a little bit about what that looks like for us and how that can look like for any other family, because we all have different situations and life stages as well. Does that make sense? Are we tracking at this point?
Good.
Okay. Do you think we're crazy? Probably. No. Good. So, you know, like I said, we go to church, we read our Bible, we pray at the dinner table, we talk to our kids about Jesus, we have conversations as they come up of what does God say about that. We have conversations about what it means to be married and what it means to have a boyfriend maybe and what that looks like. And we also have conversations about when our friends' parents tell them, no, we had kids first and then we got married. Because then we got to interact with that as well and talk about, well, that was the decision that they made. We made this decision because this is what we've learned from God and that God taught us is the best way to live out. And so as we have those conversations, it also interacts with what they hear from the world around them. And that's part of what it means to train our kids. Like I said, because we do Young Life full time, our job interacts with our family a lot. So we bring our kids to camp with us when we're leading a Young Life camp, and we have teenagers everywhere. And they actually now, they call teenagers campers. Like if they see teenagers, they're like, look, Mom, campers, because that's like their context of when they're around teenagers. those are campers. But I would say that's the smaller, less significant part of the way our kids interact with ministry. I mean, they're just kind of there and it's a fun week and that kind of thing. But I'd say the main part that we do ministry and family is in how we disciple and are discipled. And so for us, it is important to us that we are around younger believers. And sometimes that's young unmarried adults, but sometimes it's young families with smaller kids or with kids the same age as ours. And we think it's important to invite them into our world, because as we're discipling young Christians that don't have the same Bible background that we do, we believe that how that lives out is a big piece of it. And so we don't just want to spend an hour a week with someone I'm discipling and teach them about the Bible. We also want them to be a part of... Oh, Ryan's got to go. Thanks, Mom. We also want them to be a part of...
Save my donut.
See? It's still sitting there. We want them to see what it means for us to live out faith in our marriage. We want them to see what it looks like to raise our kids. And in all the mistakes that we make along the way, we get to talk about that a lot too. And so we have just learned that for us, this process of discipleship means really inviting people into our family. And that means that these sometimes Christian families that we're discipling, that our kids get to be around too and get to have those conversations and they get to see that. And I think it's important as they get older that we continue to talk to them more about why that's the case, of what discipleship means and why these other families are just involved in our life all the time. But it also means that in discipleship with non-believing families, that we want non-believers to be in our home on a regular basis. Because our kids go to school, and this may not be true for all of you, our kids go to public schools in our German neighborhood, and so they're already exposed to a lot. And we've just kind of learned we're not going to be too concerned. Take all this grain of salt. We do protect our children. But we just know they live in the world, and we can't keep them from that. And so they're going to hear things. They're going to hear, you know, well, we had kids first and then just decided to get married this year. And so we're going to need to talk through that with them. And they're going to be exposed to that eventually. And so we've just kind of made the decision it's going to be as they grow up, because there's kids their age that are experiencing that, and so they're going to be around it too. But that means that we're very actively involved in talking through all of these things with our kids. It means that we have non-believers in the home with us, and it means we talk to our kids about, yes, they said that word, but we don't use that word, and here's why. Because they're going to hear the word eventually, and we've just decided might as well be in our home. Look at my notes. So yeah, this discipleship of our children, we are becoming more and more convinced that happens in how we live our life everywhere we go and in everything we do, in the neighborhood and in our home. Yeah, it also means that we just very practically, we're really, really proactive about protecting our children from abuse, because we do have a lot of young people in our home. We started reading books from a really young age about what is appropriate touch and what is not, and when you get to say no, and my body is my body, and all, because we just said, you know what? Again, we can't protect them from everything, so we're going to do our best, but we're also going to empower them. And so just as a little practical thing, that's something that's been important to us as a family, as we disciple our children and bring them up in a dark world around us. And it does look different in different stages, but we have just realized one of the things that I think was such a huge blessing to me growing up at this church and in this world. I went to public schools growing up, and I am kind of an advocate for, even though half my family works in private schools now, and so we get it. Like, we're not saying one's evil and one's good, but I'm really grateful that I grew up around non-believers a lot, and that I learned from my parents and watching them interact with our neighbors and people in the world around them what it means to interact with non-believers. I'm so thankful that I had older women that discipled me my whole life, and that I always had younger women that I got to pour into. And I think a big piece of that was seeing the way that was lived out in their world around them, in their marriage and their families, watching women raise their kids before I did. In college, I spent a lot of time at my mentor's house and spent the night there sometimes, and she had little kids running around, and I just got to be a part of that. And so I think if we don't do that, we're missing out on a big chunk of discipleship, because discipleship is not just how we read our Bible and pray, but it's also how we live out our life, and we learn that living in context with other people, both believers and non-believers. So now I've got to rambling too long, sorry. But some of the ways that we've talked about doing this is maybe having a family mission statement or a family verse. For us, it is all about being in the world of non-believing Germans, that we are clear that our mission is not to international community in Munich. Our calling is to German families in our neighborhood. And so that's where we are, and that's part of the way we raise our kids and have them involved. And it means if you have people you're pouring into and that are pouring into you, you can think about what does that mean for a family and not just me individually. What does discipleship look like as a family and not just individually? So yeah, let me open it up again to you. How much time do we have? 2 more minutes?
Yeah, 3 minutes.
I have 3 minutes. What is that? How does that strike you? What does that look like in your family? What are some ideas from you guys of what does it mean to disciple your children as you are discipling others? And I use the word discipleship all the way from I've met somebody for the first time and I'm giving them that shock of blessing, of love, all the way to walking through the faith and all of that is discipleship to me. So what can that look like? What have you guys done?
Mm-hmm. Or not even struggling, just to talk about marriage. Like, we have our kids watch their kids for them so that we can have some of them.
Yeah, I love that. That's
and
great.
And we tell them why they need it to.
Mm-hmm. That's a great example. Yeah, none of this has to be crazy radical stuff. I mean, we're not asking you to, like, become a halfway house tomorrow or anything. Yeah, that's a great example.
One thing that we probably didn't talk about was one thing that almost all of us are involved in, and that's work.
Mm-hmm.
You have to work with people.
Yeah.
And you have to be wise in how you share your faith, because you have to still work with that person. You become an antagonist and create an opposite situation. But at the same time, you can still share the love and gospel of Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
You may not be so directly. But just in doing things that they may not expect, in turn, is one way to show love in an environment that is very hostile to any kind of Christianity at all.
Yeah.
We do have a Bible study we do once a week at work.
Mm-hmm.
What's unique about ours is that we, one of the, it's not a vice president, he's a leadership position over the account, and he typically goes floor by floor around and advertises that we have a Bible study.
Mm-hmm.
We get different people who show up. We don't the people who attend don't really go around and advertise it, but he does. It's kind of one of those things where when he's in leadership, you can't really say anything negative about it. You just say yes or no, and you leave, right? So it's a unique position. It's a unique opportunity. I'm glad God is doing that in the corporate world. I truly believe it starts there, and you then go out from there, including in the families.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. But something my mom did with me was when somebody had a baby or had a need, she would make a meal and would involve me in making the meal, talk about why we're doing it, what their need is, and then would bring me with her to give it to them and talk to them.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that.
Being a stable mom, it's important to reach out to mothers if your child is sick, and to check up on the children and get the mothers and your friends sick, and so,
yes, I want some. How do I get in on that?
It's so small, and just to think of others and moms who are stay at home all day long and with children, that's a good one.
Yeah, that's great.
I feel a little sick.
Right? You need some pho, too.
Yeah.
There's
a ministry
out
there
you guys being with us this morning.
Thanks.
And man, so much to unpack. I feel like we could have, you guys covered
threw up
so
a lot
much.
Of
yeah, I was
now.
Like, oh my goodness, I have so many thoughts. I think, you know, one, for depending on where you're coming from, you know, some of you already have ways that your kids are involved. Some of you have younger kids, some of you have older kids. I would say, like, one really practical step from the very beginning is just, who can you be praying for with your kids?
Yeah.
And that just already, just that very simple, you don't even have to do anything yet, but just over that meal, even before you're having dinner or going to bed, it's like, how can we pray? Who are we praying for?
Yeah.
You pray for their friends, pray for their parents, pray for your neighbors, you know, and that's just a way of saying, you know, we care about them, and that's a good place to start.
Love
and
that.
As you pray, you know, how God might move you to then act. So that's cool.